And I said, well, I was going to ask you to be our main luncheon speaker. And he says, I accept. And I said, well, you just told me you were going to do these things. And he says, no, I accept. This is great. I would like to introduce him, not as a has-been, but as a guy that's still going. Thank you very much, Gene from Hawthorne.
Yeah, my name is Gene, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. And I've been married to an alcoholic for 38 and a half years, and I've never been bored. They keep you on your toes. My wife is sitting here, right here, and she just celebrated her 14th birthday in AA on the 14th of this month. I got to Al-Anon before her. I got here in December, of 21st of December last year, 14 years. And it's probably the only thing I've ever done continually for 14 years is be in Al-Anon. I've done everything else in spurts, but I've been in Al-Anon 14 years. I'm proud of it. Anyway, you know, when I came to the program, they started calling me, they nicknamed me. I came in Manhattan Beach, which is really a slick town, you know. The ghetto in Manhattan Beach, the houses are only $500,000. So it's a really rich area. But they're a beach town, and the people at the club that I went to, with the Southwest, the Manhattan Beach Alano Club, they, you know, used to come there in bikinis and in shorts and all that, and they all had nicknames. You know, there was Boston John and El Segundo June and Manhattan Sally and all these things, and for some reason or another, they started calling me Crazy Gene. And I'll tell you what happened. I was standing in an Al-Anon meeting one night, and a couple of girls walked in, and I was talking to my sponsor. And a couple of girls walked in the door, and they said to her, there's that Crazy Gene. And I looked at my sponsor, and I said, I don't know what the hell she's talking about. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm as sane as the rest of these people in this room. And I looked around the room, and I wasn't too sure, I'll tell you. But I said, why would they say that? And she said, well, Gene, I have a lady sponsor, by the way. I have a black belt Al-Anon as a sponsor. She got 33 years in the program, and she saved my life many times and my wife's life many times. Because I'd have killed her if I'd have had the chance. If I could have figured a way to hide the body, I'd have killed her. But what do you do with this thing after a while? You know, it hangs around the house, it's dead, and it stinks after a while, you know. And there's no way to hide a body. You know? I think most Al-Anons have the same problem. If they could hide the body, they'd kill the alcoholic or something. Or kill himself. Anyway, I asked my sponsor, I said, how come they call me that? And she said, well, some of the stories you tell are really crazy. And I said, yeah, but they're all the truth. She said, I know that, but they're crazy. I said, what one are they talking about? She said, the one about you running around the backyard in your jogging shorts in the middle of the night. And I said, I didn't think that was funny. You know, it's a very serious program. So I'll tell you what happened. See, my wife used to go to bed sober and get up drunk. That bothered the hell out of me. What am I supposed to talk louder? Okay. How loud do you want me to talk? That better? Anyway, my wife used to go to bed drunk and get up sober. And it bothered the hell out of me. Because if I went to bed sober, I got up sober. And if I went to bed drunk, I got up throwing up. I don't know about the rest of you, Al-Anon, but that's the way I am. And I decided I'd better watch her. You know, and watching the practicing alcoholic is fascinating. And it's a lot of fun. Keeps you busy. Keeps you from going completely crazy while you're in that fast lane. And I remember one night I was laying in bed, and she got up and she went in the bathroom. And she was jiggling the top of the toilet. And I lay there and I said to myself, I wonder what's wrong with the toilet that she's jiggling the damn thing. Must be something wrong with it. And if she'd say something to me, I'm sure I'd fix it if I got around to it. Anyway, she came back to bed and I got up and I went in the bathroom. I took the lid off and looked in there. And there was a bottle of vodka floating around there like a guy on TV that saw that blue water in the canoe, you know. And I took it out and I did exactly like you're supposed to do. I poured the booze down the toilet and I put the bottle back in the lid in the tank and I put the lid on and went back to bed and it just floated a little higher. And I laid in bed and I waited because I knew she was going to go to the bathroom and she was going to have a drink. And it gives you a feeling of power. And it makes you feel warm all over when you know you got them at last. Yeah. She got up and she went in there about an hour later. And there was some words said in there as she lifted that lid up and found an empty bottle. It could have turned the paint black, I'll tell you. And then she threw the bottle away and came back to bed. And she gave me that love sign, you know. As if to kill me if she had a gun. She'd have stabbed me to death in that bed, I'll tell you. But we started our hiding and finders thing. And I don't know if you guys ever played that game. But we played it in earnest, I'll tell you. I don't know how long we played this game in the bathroom, but it might have been 6 months, it might have been 2 years, for all I know, because time flies when you're having fun, I'll tell you. You know, when you're going crazy and you don't know what the hell's causing it, and you really don't want to admit it, and you told everybody in town about it, and nobody wants to listen anymore. They turn their back and walk away. And I remember she'd hide it in the bathroom, and I'd go in there and I'd take the bottles and I'd throw it away and I'd fill it half full of water, or empty it out and fill it full of water and put it back in there, and she'd drink that and she'd get pissed, you know, she'd be madder than hell after a couple of hours. And but there, I'll tell you, alcoholics get drunk a lot and they get stupid on booze, but they aren't dumb. If you steal their booze long enough, they change the hiding place. So she started hiding in the living room. And living rooms aren't too hard. I mean, where the hell can you hide a bottle in the living room? You know, you stick it under the couch is tilted. You put it under a cushion, the cushion's tilted, you know. She did hide one that I know of in the back of the TV set. Because the TV broke one day and I was taking the lid off and a half a pint fell out. And I said to her, where the hell did that come from? She said, well, the neighbors must have left it there, and I figured, what a bunch of neighbors we got coming over and putting booze in the back of our TV set. It's a half pint. Half pints are easy to hide. I dropped a pencil. I don't know who owns it. I'm a very neat person. You notice that. Alamans are always neat. You know. You know, I can remember looking in the cupboards in the kitchen for hours and hours. We had 12 cupboards in our kitchen. And the problem with looking in cupboards is you just can't do it when they're there. Because if you're looking in the cupboards and they ask you, what are you looking for? What do you answer? Well, I'm just looking, you know. And they know you're lying, you know. And so what you have to do is you have to look in the cupboards when they're sleeping, taking a bath, shopping, passed out, or in the middle of the night. Well, I wasn't there during the daytime, so I had to do it in the middle of the night. Well, what we do is we'd eat dinner and then we'd watch TV for a while and about 11 o'clock go to bed and watch Johnny Carson and make love for 2 or 3 hours and then fall asleep, and then she'd get into the bathroom and then in the kitchen and then all this stuff, and then after she'd come back to bed, I'd have to go out in the kitchen and I'd look in the cupboards. Well, if you got 12 cupboards, it's a bitch, I'll tell you. So you open the cover up and you look in every goddamn thing in there. You can't just look in them. You got to look and you got to feel it. You got to tip the cups upside down. You got to turn the glasses upside down and shake them. They're sneaky. Vodka doesn't, it's like water. You know, you put a glass of vodka in it, unless an earthquake came and it shook it a little bit, you never know it was there. My wife used to put vodka in her vinegar bottle. Now, not the quart bottle, that little cute bottle they put on the table. So you take that and you smell it, and it smells like vinegar. But you have to taste it to tell whether it's vodka. So you take a little taste and it's vodka. It's not too bad. You can throw it away. But every now and then she didn't put vodka in the vinegar bottle. And you take a big gulp of that vinegar, and you're throwing up in the goddamn sink, and she's in the bedroom laughing like hell at you, see? The sneaky people, you know. Anyway, what was happening is that I'd get in there about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd get through about 4:30 looking in the cupboards. Then I'd go back to bed, and I'd get up at 5:30, and I'd take a shower and shave and get ready to go to work. And I'd be at work, and at lunchtime, I'd be exhausted. Now, my wife would feel great. She'd been passed out half the night, sleeping. And I'm up half the night looking for a bottle in the cupboards. I go to work, and at noontime I'd get so tired I'd put my head down on my desk and I'd take like a 15-minute nap. And I could hear those people around me, they'd say, look at poor Gene. He's working so hard that he's got to take a little nap at lunchtime, you know. And I ate that up. I said, you know, God, if you gave me two pieces of wood, I'd nail them together and they'd throw them on my shoulder like a cross and I'd be the martyr of the year, I'll tell you. And we are martyrs, I'll tell you. I am anyway, you know, give me a chance. But what could I, supposing they asked me, they say, hey, Gene, why do you take a little nap at lunchtime? I said, well, I was up all night looking in a goddamn cupboard for a bottle of booze. Well, you know, down the street you go, look for another job. So you never say anything to them about that. You'd take it in and be the little martyr. Anyway, I didn't know what to do, really. I was just going crazy about it. But I sat at my desk one day and I figured out, I'm an engineer by profession. And I was sitting at my desk one day and I knew exactly what to do. I went to the hardware store and they bought some little pots. They're little measuring. They look like a little aluminum pot. And they're about that big and they go up to about that big. And I bought some hooks. And I put the hooks on the inside of the cupboard doors. And I hung a little pot on each cupboard door. Little one up to a big one. So if you open the cupboard door, it went click, click, or clunk, clunk, depending on the size of the cup. And I took my daughter, who was 16 at the time, and I put her in the kitchen, and I went in the living room, or in the bedroom, and opened the door about that far, and I'd listen to her, and I'd say, open cupboard door number 7. She'd open up and go clunk, clunk. And then she'd open up cupboard door number 8, and she'd open that one up. And after about 3 months of practice, I could tell a click from a clunk just like that. Then we practiced, I'd say, go ahead and just open any door. She'd open up and I'd say, it's either a 7 or a 9. You know, God, you really got it down. And I went into our bedroom and I took our bed and pushed it up against the wall. And I made her sleep on the inside. So if she got up in the middle of the night, she had to crawl over top of me and wake me up. Now, alcoholics don't crawl too good after about 3 drinks. So you go to bed at 11 o'clock, sleep till 1, and then all of a sudden she has 3 drinks and you wake up. And she'd go in the bathroom, she'd jiggle the tank top or whatever it was, and then go into the kitchen. As soon as she headed for the kitchen, I'd jump out of bed and open the door about that far and listen. And she'd be out there and she'd open the door and I'd go cluck, cluck, and I'd say, fella, jump back in bed, cover up, she'd come back in, she'd get into bed, you jump out of bed, you go out in the kitchen, open cupboard door number 11, look in the thing. If you can get it within 3 or 4 doors, you got it made. And it's only an hour, maybe 45 minutes. Find a bottle, throw it out, throw a bottle out in the backyard, get rid of it, go back to bed, happier than hell. Not knowing that you had 3 more bottles hidden in cupboard number 5, you know. Terrible. You know. She always drunk in the morning. See? I remember one night I went out in the kitchen, I opened the cupboard door, and there was a fifth of Kamchatka vodka sitting in that cupboard. It's about half full or half empty, depending on if you're alcoholic or Al-Anon, you know. And I looked at that and I said, gee, I wonder how much she drinks every day. Because we used to have a thing in our house. When I came home at night, I walked in the house and I said to her implicitly, I said, how many drinks have you had today? In the same kind of voice. And she always said the same thing. And I'd say, nobody could get that drunk on 2 drinks. And she said, okay, you know. Well, I always thought she lied to me about it. You know, and I was looking at this bottle, and I kept saying, well, there is it. And I was going to grab it and throw it away. But I figured if I grabbed it, she might have it wired with electricity, and I'd grab the damn thing, and I'd be dead on the floor, and she'd be out there drinking and having a good time, you know. So I said, I'll mark it with a pencil right there. Nah, I better not. If I mark it, she'll see the mark. And then she'll put something in it, or she, you know, she'll know what to do. I'll remember it's at the bottom of the H. I went to work the next day, you know, happier than him. Came home that night, opened the cupboard door up, looked in, I couldn't remember if it was the bottom of the H or the top of the T. So I said, well, I'll watch tomorrow. It's at the bottom of the H. Went to work the next day, come home, the bottle was gone. So I never did find out. But after my wife one day, she got sober, I asked her one day, I said, how come you always lied about your drinking? She says, I never lied about my drinking. She always said, you had 2. She says, you can put 2 in anything. You can put 2 in this, or you can put 2 in this, depending on what you take it out of, you know. That's a believer, you know. Crazy. Anyway, I spent a number of nights, probably 6 months of nights, in that kitchen. And one night, my wife got out of bed, and she gave me a shove, woke me up. Friend, I was wide awake. She went in the bathroom and jiggled the tank top. Went out in the living room, wandered around the living room for a while. Went into the kitchen, opened every goddamn cupboard door in that place. Click, 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 click. Went out into the backyard, wandered around there for a little bit, came back in, and as she got into bed, she gave me that old love sign, you know, I love you. And I broke out in a cold sweat. I didn't know what the hell to do. See? But I reached in the smoking stand, and I got a flashlight, and I went out in the backyard. And I was out there. We lived in Redondo Beach at the time. Redondo was like this. It's very hilly. And they lived up there, and we lived down there. There was a couple of old couple up there. It must have been 50 or 60 or something, an old bunch. And they were the nosiest bunch in the world. I think they're the ones who used to call cops on us all the time. Because we'd be discussing alcoholism in our living room. And the cops came to the door, and knocked on the door, and I opened the door up. And the cop says, we understand there's a problem here. And I says, you're god darn right. There is a problem over there. That woman is driving me crazy. She's drunk all the time. And the cop looked at me. And he looked at her. Now, she was standing there dressed nicely. You know, she never looked like she was going to fall down. But at the doorknob was this crazy guy with his hair up in the air. Had this glassy stare in his eyes and his blood red vest and a big bulging neck, you know. The cop said, would you step outside for a minute? And I said, yeah. They stepped outside, he put handcuffs on me and took me to jail. And my alcoholic wife had to come down and bail me out. How do you like that? Have you ever been bailed out of jail by your alcoholic? No. I'm the only Al-Anon I've been doing it. You know? And boy, is that ego buster, I'll tell you. Well, what's the matter with you, honey? You know. Anyway. I was in this backyard, and I was in my jockey shorts because it was, you know, I just didn't have time to get dressed. And the grass, when you're living with an alcoholic, you just can't, you don't have time to cut the grass. And it gets quite high, about that high. And it was wet, it was in the winter time, and my jockey shorts were getting wet by this time. And I couldn't find a goddamn bottle. And, you know, and all of a sudden, the dog next door started barking. And they had a little dog about that big, didn't have any hair, but it had a long skinny tail. I thought it was a rat for 2 years, I think. It was named was either Fufu or Fifi, and it barked all the time. In the morning, they let that little devil out, and he chased me to my car every morning. You know, and I hated that dog. And the damn dog starts barking, and then he came to the door and turned the light on. And then she came to the door, and she says, what's that crazy SOB doing out there now? Was none of the goddamn business. I was out there trying to save this woman's life. Well, I didn't think that was so crazy, and I know all the Al-Anons here will agree with me, won't you? Jesus. Must be something wrong. Nobody agrees. Anyway, that's why they started calling me Crazy Gene. And a few other weird stories. Because we had we've been married 38 years. We'd been married up to 25 years before we got to the program. And we did wild and woolly things to each other. I started out, a friend of mine kept, I just talk to my friends about this stuff all the time. They tell me, get rid of her. Boy, get rid of the problem. So I went to a lawyer, and I gave him $75, and he filled out the papers. And he said, Gene, he says, if I was you, before you go home tonight, get an apartment. Because once your wife finds out you're going to divorce her, she's going to be very disturbed. And I said, how old are you? And I went home and told her. I said, listen, I just filed for divorce. In about 10 days, the guy's going to come here with these divorce papers. And he's going to give you these papers. And you're going to get divorced. And take one of those alcoholic cars. And you can get out and keep going. And she said, okay. And I went to work the next day and I forgot all about it. About a week or so, when Bonnie came home one night, opened the front door, and the house was perfect. I had to go out and take a look and see if I was in the right house. The kids were all cleaned up. Dinner was cooking. It wasn't burning. Because we used to burn a lot of stuff in our house. When you're talking about alcoholism, and you talk for about 2 hours, and things are cooking on the stove, they get burnt to a crisp, you know. You throw pot and pan everything away. Anyway, went home this night and walked in the house and everything was great. And on the coffee table was a martini and there was a newspaper there. And I just couldn't believe it. So I looked over in a fireplace and there is the divorce papers. And they have a special glow. You know, you could take one and put it in your pocket and your coat would just go like that. It just moves around. You could put it in this room and it'd light the whole room up. And shut the lights off. You know what it was, yeah? And I ate it up. I looked around and I said, this is what's happening, you know. We ate dinner. We had mashed potatoes, brown gravy, and roast beef. I'll never forget it. About 8 o'clock, my wife got the kids, put their homework done, and got them showered and into bed. About 11 o'clock, she went and took a hot bubble bath. About 11:30, she was prancing around the living room in this Baby Dell nightgown. And I'll tell you, I learned a secret that night. I want you all to listen now. It's very hard to get divorced when you're horny. I remember the last thing we were doing was ripping these divorce papers up and throwing them in the fireplace and burning them. I filed for divorce 13 times. Twice because it was one hell of a good way to spend a weekend. And the other time because I was crazy, you know. So if you don't know what you're doing, you better not try that. Anyway, we did crazy things, you know. We've been on the program 14 years now, and we spent a lot of time doing weird things to each other. I have a son that has a problem, and I have a daughter that has a problem. I have a daughter that's an Al-Anon and one that's an Alateen, and she'll be out of Alateen in a couple of years. And my son thinks I'm the president of Al-Anon. And the judge that sentenced him thinks I'm the president of Al-Anon. You see, my son got a drunk driving ticket, and so he had to go to court. And it was in Danning, way out in Moreno Valley. And I went up before the judge, and the judge said to him, "Is your father, Gene Walker, the president of Al-Anon?" And my son said, "Yeah, I think he is." It also happens that the judge is a sober alcoholic on the program. And he had been at a picnic I had given a pitch for in San Bernardino County 6 months before. He remembered my name. And they gave him, my son had to do a work permit. They were going to throw his butt in jail for 5 months, lock him up. Instead, they gave him 5 months of going to jail every night after work, which was a miracle. I didn't think he'd ever do that, but he did it. He rode his bicycle to jail and to work every day, and I thought it was a miracle. Because they won't give him a driver's license because he drinks, you know, too much. And I think it's a miracle that he went before this judge because he would have lost everything. He didn't have much left anyway, but he would have lost what he had left. You know, I've been in Al-Anon, and I've been chairman of Al-Anon Intergroup in L.A. And a lot of you people have been down there. I've met Donnie down in L.A. and Joyce. And by the way, a bunch of my friends came from Los Angeles, from Hawthorne. They're sitting at those two tables over there. They're the bored ones. See? They're the ones that have heard this story about 50 times. And I don't know why they came to Bakersfield, but they like it up here. And one of my babies there and a couple of people I've known for years. One of the girl over there, the blonde one, the good-looking one with the ugly husband, she was my daughter's girlfriend and friend in high school. And on our 25th wedding anniversary, me and my wife are going to go and have a really good time. We're going to get the motel with the mirrors on the ceilings and the whole bit, you know. And the vibrating bed and the whole bit. And Larsine came over to babysit with my daughter and the other kids. We left the house. We're happy. Went to put gas in the car. She fell out of the goddamn car at the gas station, drunk as hell. Couldn't walk. I got pissed off, threw her back in the car, and took her off to home. I remember coming in the door, and Larsine says, she said, the door flung open, and here I came in, dragging this poor woman behind me. She said she got on the phone and called her mother and wanted to go home right now. But I was the nicest guy in the world. I never did any of those things that I can remember. Now, I might have did some crazy things. It's wild. When you're living in a disease of alcoholism, as long as we did, and I say 15 or 17 years, my wife drank alcoholic tea for 10 years. And she drank a fifth of vodka every day and a six pack of wine, a little bit of little wine to go with it, just to wash it all down. And when I went took it to the doctor says, I said, you know, she can't drink, she's an alcoholic. So he said, how much does she drink? And I told him, he says, it's impossible for the human body to do that. And I said, there's a miracle sitting right there in the bed. So he wheeled her back into the room and gave her a few choice words. Didn't do any good. She did get the AA. I thought, I keep telling her it wasn't for me, she'd have never got sober, because I'm the one that really did it, you know. Worked my can off for her. And she called me one day on the phone and she said, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, whether you like it or not. And I said, geez, what did I do? You know, what did I do to get her to go? You know, never did find out. What happened was I put an ad in the paper for a shipping clerk. And a guy showed up at the office and he made out this application and he didn't look too good, but he didn't look too bad. And they brought the application and looked at it. He was highly educated and overly qualified, but at the bottom of the application it said, do you belong to any secret organizations? And he wrote down the Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked at that damn thing and I said, Jesus, I got one of them things at home, and now one wants to come to work for me. I knew I could handle her easy. What the hell, you know, I'm going a little crazy, but that's okay. But two of them, one at work and one at home, I really didn't think I'd do it. I told him that. He says, I need a job, and I need it bad, and he says, money doesn't make any difference. So for a long time, I wondered why I hired Tom. And I come to believe that God put Tom exactly where he was supposed to be. And I hired Tom, and after he'd been working for me for a few weeks, I snuggled up to him and asked him some funny questions about alcoholics, you know. I said, how much do they drink? And he said, they drink a lot. I said, do they lie about their drinking? He says, yeah, sometimes they lie about how much they drink and how much they don't drink. I said, man, sounds right. I say, steal money off you? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They lie about it? Oh, yeah. I said, boy, I got one at home for sure, you know. Yeah. It's all lies. I asked him one day, I said, how can you tell an alcoholic from a normal person? He said, well, alcoholics are like ducks. And I didn't understand. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if you got a duck and it waddles on the street, you're pretty sure it's a duck. If it quacks like a duck, it's pretty sure it's a duck. If it hangs around other ducks, you know it's a duck. Alcoholics the same way. They kind of stumble down the street. They drink like alcoholics, hang around alcoholics. Must be, they might be an alcoholic. I said, well, how can you tell? And he says, only when they stand up and say, my name is Sam, I'm an alcoholic. And he says, other than that, I don't know who they are. So I wasn't sure. And Tom had told me how his story, how he had got to AA. He had been living in a chicken coop in Inglewood, which is a real nice part of town. And he had died. And they called the ambulance over and they were hauling his body away and his toe twitched. And they took him to the hospital and he worked on him. And he brought him back to life. The doctor told him, Tom, if I was you, I wouldn't do that anymore because it's dangerous. And it scared him so bad he joined AA, which is bad, you know. And I told him, I said, gee, terrible things happened to you. And all about 3 months went by, and Tom came up to me one day, and he said, Gene, he says, I have to ask you a very, very personal question. And I figured what he was going to do is he was going to ask me to loan him some money. And he disappeared, and I never seen him again. And I said, well, go ahead. He said, Gene, he says, you give me the impression you might have somebody living in your house with you that might have a drinking problem. And I had never been so disgusted in all my life. Of all the unmitigated gall, for him to think I even knew anybody that had a drinking problem, no less living in my house. I figured the first thing I'll do is I'll fire him. Worse than that, I'll never speak to him the rest of my life. So I walked into my desk, sat down. About 3 days later, ran up to Tom. I said, Tom, you got to help me. He said, what's the matter? And I said, I think my wife's an alcoholic. He says, well, I wasn't sure whether it was you or her. Boy, does that put a resentment in your pocket, I'll tell you. He said, you think you can get your wife to go to an AA meeting Saturday night? And I said, I don't know, I'll go home and ask her. Going home that night, I said, how would you like to go to an AA meeting Saturday night? She said, oh, okay. What the hell, who wants to go to an AA meeting, you know? Why would she want to go? After she got sober, I asked her, how come you went to that first AA meeting? She said, well, we hadn't been out of the house together in 3 years. I mean, where do you take them? They are embarrassing. The last time we went out, we went to a real nice restaurant. We had a couple of drinks in a bar, which is a state law, I think. And then we went over to the table and we took our drinks over there. And I had a nice salad and she had a bowl of soup. I looked over and she is face down in the soup. And I picked her up to take a look and see if she was okay, breathing. And now you have to get out of the restaurant. And restaurants are strange. If I had to get out that door over there, you'd have to go through this whole thing to get out over there. Nonchalantly, so nobody notices you're carrying this drunk. And I think alcoholics come in two sizes, dish rags and boards. They're either stuck like a board or like a dish rag. And my wife was a dish rag. And you got to pick her up, and they don't have any handholds. You kind of get her and nonchalantly go through these tables after putting $20 on the table for the food, you know. And get out there, and I put her against a pole. So I paid the guy $1 to get my car. And the first thing you know, she's arm wrestling the guy for the dollar. So 50 cents is enough. Well, you know, after a while, you don't take him anyplace. Have you ever been to a party where everybody is drunk but you? And somebody says, no wonder she drinks. She married to that son of a bitch, I'd drink too. And I swear to God, that happened all the time, you know. And all of us kind of do is keep her from getting too drunk. See? But there's always them smart asses around that say things like that, you know. You know, I remember we was Saturday night in Hawthorne, California, at the Birch Street Club. It was 7:30 meeting there, and we got all dressed up in our best clothes, which weren't too good, because if you don't go anyplace, what do you need good clothes for? Clean shirt and a pair of shoes and a tie. You know what the hell? Went up there and we parked the car, and we get out of the car, and Tom was waiting at the bottom of these steps, and I said to Tom, I said, I want to thank you, Tom, for getting all these people together here tonight to get my wife sober. And he said a few choice words to me. I can't remember what they were right now, but they weren't very nice. We went inside, and a red-headed lady grabbed my wife by the hand, started writing phone numbers down on a little telephone book and giving it to her. And my wife kept saying, oh, yeah, sure. And last time I said, where are all the alcoholics? He said, they're all alcoholics. Well, I looked around, and everybody was dressed up, looked good. There was one guy that I was sure was an alcoholic. He had a T-shirt on with a hole where his belly button was, and he scratched his belly button for an hour and a half. I think he still got the same T-shirt and the same belly button. And I knew who he was. You know, they started this meeting off, and I sat next to my wife, and Tom sat next to me, and a redheaded lady sat over next to her. And I tell you, if you're going to take a wet one to the AA meeting, you got to sit next to him. Because they might say something at the podium that they're supposed to hear. And you can give them a little nudge and say, did you hear that? And they say, oh, yeah. No. And Tom was sitting next to me and said, oh, shit. And the lady next to my wife patted her on the shoulder and she said, that's okay, honey. Things will get better. Morris is back. Right. Okay. Well, everything was okay. They talked about this and that. And a guy got up there named John Newton. First time I heard John Hurton speak, and he says, I came here tonight to tell you where I used to hide my bottles. And I said, that's what these AA meetings are all about. They come to these meetings, and they tell each other where to hide their bottles, so we can't find them. And I better listen, because he might have a couple of thoughts that I never looked. And he says, I used to hide my half pints underneath the front seat of my car. He says, and I had to stop that. He says, we were riding down the street one day, me and my wife. Car stopped in front of me. I threw on the brakes. All the bottles flew out from under the front seat, jammed on the accelerator, and damn near killed both of us. So I couldn't hide them there anymore. He says, and then I started hiding them in the front yard. He says, I hide them in the bushes. Just one night, my wife turned on the front yard light. She says, all she seen out in the front yard was these glasses. It looked like a bunch of cats out there in the goddamn yard. So I couldn't hide them there anymore. He says, but the best place I ever found to hide a bottle is in a vacuum cleaner bag. And I looked at my wife, and she was as white as a ghost. And I wrote down a vacuum cleaner bag and put in the back. Well, John said a bunch of other things that were funnier than hell, and I thought it was great. And he closed the meeting, and I told Tom that I thought it was great. And we got in the car, and we were driving down Hawthorne Boulevard. which is a combination of beer joints, cocktail lounges, liquor stores, massage parlors, and any other mess you can think of, all the way from Santa Monica all the way to PV. And I said to my wife, I said, what did you think of that bunch of people? And she said, they are the nicest bunch I've ever seen in my life. I figured, God, it happened. She says, but they're the driest bunch ever. What do you say we stop at the Rust again on the way home and have a little drink? Well, when they do that, on your way home from the evening, you have to use the Al-Anon wave. And that's what you call the Al-Anon wave. And it keeps them awake. They don't fall asleep on you. And you got to talk to them all the way down Hawthorne Boulevard, Redondo Beach Boulevard, and up Grand Avenue and Goodman Street. And you park the car and you get out of the car and run for the closet. She's right behind me. Huffing and puffing. I open that closet up and pull out that Electrowax vacuum cleaner with one of those long skinny ones laid flat on the floor like it was dead. I'd pull the front off it, and there I'd pull out a bottle of vodka that was so dirty, it had about that much fuzz on it. It looked like a rabbit without ears, I'll tell you. The only spot it was clean was on the cork. And I said to her, how could you drink out of a thing like that? And she said, you gotta hold it two fingers like that, see? Well, when they do that, you know, you got to talk to them all night about their drinking, you know. God. Well, I went to work on Monday and I told Tom. Tom, I said, you didn't help Saturday night. Maury said she's not going to stay sober, but she's going to control her drinking. Well, he said a famous AA secret word. He said, bullshit. I hear that a lot at AA meetings. I wonder why. He said, Jeannie, said, what you better do is go to Al-Anon. And I said, what is Al-Anon? Last week you wanted me to join AA with my wife. Now you want me to go to Al-Anon. What the hell is that? He said, well, it's for the friends and relatives of alcoholics. And I said, well, I don't really think I need that. They probably don't need my help. And I don't need their help. He said, just in case, here's the address. It's 509 South Figueroa or South Sepulveda in Manhattan Beach. I said, don't worry about them. I'll never go to Al-Anon. Well, just in case they needed a lot of help, I drove by to locate the building just to see where it was. I drove by and there was a guy standing on the steps of this building. He had a shaved head, a little red spot around here. He had a big fur coat on it with a hood on it and a pair of cut-off jeans. He had a pair of sandals on it that were made of old tires and the inner tubes were the laces. And I said to myself, Jesus, a good thing we didn't come to this place. Because if my wife took one look at that guy, she'd never come back. That was my wife's first sponsor, by the way. So you can see how goddamn sick we were when we got those programs. Name of Leon Jones. Fantastic person. Leon's dead now. You know, so we, you know, we're not too smart when we go to these places. You know, I hung around and I hung around and trying to figure out what to do. And Tom kept saying, go to Al-Anon, go to Al-Anon. And so one night, I come home on Friday night and I told my wife, I'm going out tonight and I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to leave you home here and drink yourself to death for all I care. She said, okay. So I got all dressed up and I went over to this Al-Anon meeting in Manhattan Beach. I sat down, I looked around, and boy, they were a happy bunch of people. They were kissing and hugging each other and telling jokes. Gee, it was grand. I said, God, how do you join this thing, you know? Where do you sign up? And then they started this meeting, and the guy got up to the podium, and he said a bunch of things out of a book, and then they had a coffee break, and they did a lot of kissing and hugging, and all. And I said, God, this is fantastic. Happiest bunch I've ever seen in my life. And they started the meeting up, and the guy got up there, and he said, we have a special treat for you tonight. A lady come down from San Francisco. Her name is Helen. She's been sober 26 years. She's going to give a little pitch tonight. So I said, God, that's nice, you know. She got up there and she was a little short gal, about that big. And they put a orange crate on the floor for her to see over the podium. And she says, my name's Helen, and she's been sober 26 years, and I want to tell you how I used to be a prostitute in San Francisco in 1932. And I looked around, and deep in my heart, I had a feeling this was not an Al-Anon meeting. So I said to the guy next to me, is this an Al-Anon meeting? He says, no, the crazy people are upstairs. So I got up and I opened the door and went upstairs. And the gal leading the meeting was my neighbor three doors from me. She said to me, what do you want? And I said, they don't want me down there. They wanted me up here. And all of Al-Anon were sitting around like this. The most miserable bunch of people I've ever seen in my life. They had those beehive hairdos, and they're all blue. See? Scared the hell out of me. My sponsor was there that night. She said, when I came back down, she says, yeah, those people thought you were a spy from AA. They sent you up there to find out what the hell we're talking about. Yeah. I was the first man in 17 years that meeting was gone that ever attended that meeting. She scared the hell out of me, I'll tell you. But I lied to him. I gave him a dollar, and I told him I'd be back next week. You couldn't have got me back there if the Pope was speaking there. Not there. So I gave them, they gave me some literature, and I took it home, and I practiced the Al-Anon program my way for the next 5 years, and we both went crazy. Nubby. Crazy. Tom kept giving me literature, and I'd take the literature home, and I'd put it in the knife drawer, in the junk drawer, and you open the knife drawer, and I'd say, are you an alcoholic woman? And then you open another drawer, and it said the 20 questions were in there, and she'd take all that stuff and throw it in the fireplace and burn it. She kept the house warm on AA literature one winter, I'll swear to Christ. Because I took that stuff home every chance I got, you know. Terrible. But we got here. It was, you know, I thought that AA meetings were, I had never been to one of them meetings, and when she went to the first meeting, I thought they were, you know, kind of crazy. I figured it would be a little small room, and it'd be a card table in the middle of the room, and a little light coming down from the ceiling with a little shade on it, and it'd be smoky, and these four or five people would be sitting around this table drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes and lying. And then one would jump up and say, I gotta have a drink, and the other four would hold them down until they quit screaming and yelling, and then they go on to doing their talking, see. And I had been holding her down for about 15 years, and by the time I got some goddamn help, I'll tell you, it was terrible. And I have to tell you, my wife got sober that night in AA, but she didn't. And if you want any 30-day chips, come to my house. She got a bag full of them goddamn things. Anytime you want a 30-day chip, she gave you one. She got one 60-day chip and one 90-day chip, one 6-month chip, and one year chip. That's all that counts. Because she didn't get so... What happened was she got 30 days. She come on one night. She says, see that? And I said, yeah, what the hell is that? She says, that's a 30-day chip. She said, I've been sober 30 days. And I said, so what? I've been sober 3 years. But, you know, what the hell? Al-Anon can do that. I didn't drink because I figured if I didn't drink, she wouldn't drink. But what it did is gave her more chance to drink than what I wasn't drinking. I went to work the next day, and I said to Tom, I said, my wife came home last night with this 30-day chip. What is that? He said, well, that means she's been sober 30 days. And I go, that's how wonderful it is. Right in, I went home that night, opened her front door, and she was sitting in the middle of the living room floor with this thing on a string with a bottle of booze in the other hand saying, when you get 30 days, you got to celebrate! And she was drunk as she'd have been drunk before in her life. And she did that in a number of months, and then when she got 30 days, she scared the hell out of me. I said, what am I going to do? You know, she's going to be drunk when I get home, you know? So I decided I'd better take her to AA myself and get her fixed. Well, every night after dinner, drunk or sober, she went in the car, and we went to an AA meeting. I plunked her down in the chair, and I said, that's June, my wife, the alcoholic, and I'm not, and I need a lot of help. And all the AAs were looking at me, and they said, get out of my life. The smiling ones just wouldn't have anything to do with me. I was an AA reject. But I went anyway. Drug her along, set her on the chair. That Manhattan D.C. used to have a white carpet in the meeting room. And where we sat, it was brown. Because she shook so bad, the coffee and the Cokes and everything were all over the floor. But she sat there. One day I came back to Al-Anon. I didn't know what the hell to do. Christmas was coming. And she was talking about having some Christmas parties with her friends. The drunken friends, of course. They were going to make some beer bread and some wine cake and some brandy something and all the stuff. And she was the first thing they'd go over to Sally's house on Tuesday and wheel her home in a wheelbarrow, you know, and go over to Lorraine's house on Thursday and wheel her home in a wheelbarrow. And I figured 2 weeks of that I can't stand. So I went to a meeting with her on a Wednesday night, and I met a gal named Indian Marie. And you call that because she was an Indian, her name was Marie. And I said to Marie, I said, Brian Marie, I said, I don't know what to do with that woman. She's just drunk all the time. She's, we know it, you know. He says, we in AA say you can smell the hypocrites. And I guess she drank a bad wine. It was stinky wine anyway. They always wanted to know where. One guy wanted to know where she bought that wine from, because if she ever got drunk, he wanted to make sure he never bought any that smelled so bad. She said, Gene, what you better do is go to Al-Anon. I said, Marie, I've been to Al-Anon once and didn't like it. She said, well, my husband John over there has been going for 6 years. And looked at John, and he really needed it. I tell you, he looked sick. He didn't look as good as I did, and I looked terrible. She says, you got to go to Al-Anon. I said, well, I don't know. Well, I went to work the next day, and I figured what I better do is kill her and hide the body until after the holidays so the kids wouldn't be disappointed. And then I'd disappear and go to Nicaragua or someplace and then come back after 10 or 12 years and they'd never find me. Well, I'd do it Friday night after somehow. Come home Friday night after work and I open the door and she's all dressed up and I said, where are you going? She says, me and the girls are going to Long Beach Navy Hospital to a special meeting. And beep, beep, Hong Kong, and away they go. I sat down and I didn't have nothing to do. Spoiled the whole evening. Carol was going to kill her and didn't have nothing to do. My four-year-old daughter was running around. I sat there and looked at her, and I said, come on, honey. We're going to go to Al-Anon. And I don't know why. I have the slightest idea why I decided to go to Al-Anon tonight. I put a coat on her, and I put a jacket on me, and we went over to Al-Anon, and we snuck in the back door. And there was a potted plant, one of those rubber trees, sitting in the corner of this thing. And I said, sit down here and play with this potted plant while Daddy goes and listens to these crazy old ladies talk about Al-Anon. And I looked around, and it was the nicest bunch of ladies I've ever met in my life in that meeting. For some reason or other, they had changed. None of them had the beehive hairdos. They were all lovely, lovely ladies. My sponsor was there that night, and she told me that that meeting hadn't changed in the 17 years I'd been in going. That was the second time I went to the meeting, and they were all different. But I was ready that night to go to Al-Anon. And I stayed that night. I've been coming back ever since. I spent the first 2 years. I met a guy in Al-Anon. His name was Dick T. Dick Thornton. I said to Dick one night, I said, how come you go to all these AA meetings? I said, you're at every night. He said, well, I go there to... He said, I go there to preserve my recovery in AA. And he said, I don't understand why Al-Anon's on go every night, too. So I said, yeah, that's not right. So I decided I'd go every night. And I did. I went every night for 2 years, and it's just been wonderful. We used to have to go from Hawthorne to Anaheim because there was no Sunday night meeting, and I got tired of doing that, so I opened a Sunday night meeting in Manhattan Beach, and we loved it. We had a fantastic time. It's still going today, you know, and we just have a lot of fun. We're a fun bunch down there. Crazy, you know. We laugh a lot. And I think part of the program is, the biggest part of this program is the laughing. If you can laugh at yourself, of all the crap you've gone through, and laugh at the alcoholic, you know, what the hell? They're our babies. We love them. What would you do without one? You know, they're great. They're the rascals of the world. And I love every one of them. And I can't think of anything I'd rather do than be in this program. It's a wonderful place to be. What time are we pulled? 10? Okay, got about 10 more minutes. It's going to take an hour to get through that 10 minutes. But I've been in Al-Anon, and I've done a lot of things in Al-Anon. I became a member of the Southwest Alano Club after my wife got sober. And they have a rule that you can't be a board member unless you're sober a year. So I stayed sober a year. I didn't, what the hell, a year for an Al-Anon is easy, you know. And so I joined, they elected me to the board. And then the second week, they made me the chairman of the board. I figured, what the hell's going on here, you know? And then I quit that, and they made me the treasurer and the manager of the thing. And the goddamn thing was broke. Didn't have a dime in the thing. They owed money to everybody. And so I took over as treasurer, straightened it all out. And 2 years, I gave it back to them. They had everything. The building was paid off, and all the bills were paid, and they gave them $17,000 in the bank. And in 2 months, they were broke. And they came to me and they said, what are we doing wrong? And I said, you're stealing more than I did. You can't steal as much as I did. See? But, you know, everybody had their hand in the till, I guess. What the hell? Yeah. But they got it straightened out after a while. Another Al-Anon helped them out, I think. Or half the Al-Anon. You know, I waited till I was 10 years sober on this program. You know, we're sober in our minds, not the physical part of the thing. And the girls in our group down there asked me to run for the service board in L.A. And I really didn't want to because I didn't think I would be elected. I am the most imperfect person in the world. Why the hell they'd want to elect me to do anything, I don't know. You know. And if I lose, what am I going to say? You know, rejection. And I won by the biggest landslide in the whole damn thing of Gallimon, you know. I was shocked. And then I became chairman of the board 2 years ago. And I love it. I get into service in these conventions. I've been something to do with one of the conventions almost every year in the last 10 years. Either treasurer. This year, I am the co-host of the Southern California Convention. And who the hell cares? You know, I'll do anything you want. I'm the only man on the committee, which is unusual. Jesus, I've been the only man in Al-Anon at most of the meetings all my life. Anyway, it's been a good trip. I want to thank Donnie for asking me to come up here. I don't know why the hell she ever asked me. You know, I'm not the greatest speaker in the world. So, and I don't have a message. All I know is that things are okay. You know, we have the same problems today as we had when we came to this program. Except my wife doesn't drink. And we have to pay the rent. We're the house payments. We have to make car payments. We have to make the telephone bill. The gas company, they still want their money. Only thing is, I haven't had for 14 years, I haven't had a guy knocking the front door and say, gas bills due. And you give them a bum check hoping that you get to the bank before the check clears, you know. That's the difference. Today our bills are paid, and not always paid on time, but they're paid when we get ready to. And things have been good. We haven't had too much problems. Our daughter, we had a daughter, our almost 19-year-old daughter, was born with a hole in the roof of her mouth. And we tried for years to find somebody, a doctor that would be able to do the plastic surgery on her. And my wife went to our doctor one day, and she says, I just haven't found the right doctor yet. And he says, well, we've got this doctor who came from India. He just started in our office. Why don't you talk to him? And it was a doctor we needed. And our insurance wouldn't have paid for all the bills. So a friend of ours said, well, why don't you go to the Crippled Children of Los Angeles? And they paid all the bills. It was a lot of money. And my daughter can speak now well. I'll never forget the day she came out of the operating room and out of the care unit, and she could speak, and she could speak like we do. And she never spoke like that before. It was wonderful, you know. And I think it's because of this program. The miracles that happen in our lives are great. I couldn't tell you them all, because you wouldn't believe me if I told you the things that have happened. You know, you'd say, whoa. But it has. Our life has been easy. I'm going to retire in 2 years. February the 7th, 1990, I'm giving up work. I'm not going to go to work every day. I'm going to do something. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do, but it's not going to be work. We're going to go to Lake Elsinore, and we're going to lay in the beach down there, and we're going to swim, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to do things that everybody else doesn't do. You know? And we're going to enjoy life. And I hope I make it till then, you know? I might kill somebody at work before then. I have 500 potential Al-Anon women that work for me. Yeah. My secretary is a Spanish Al-Anon lady. It's crazy. I have 15 sober alcoholics that work for me that went through the hospital program, one or the other, or leave. And they're the best employees I got and the happiest employees I got. But I got a lot of drunks and a lot of crazy Al-Anon people there that should be an Al-Anon. You know, I know they should be because they come in on Monday morning with dark glasses on. I say, you can't wear dark glasses while you're working. Take your glasses off and they get a big black eye or bruises and cuts and knives and Jesus, terrible things. See? But I put up notices on the board, this is Al-Anon, in Spanish and English, and nobody reads the damn stuff. Say, piss you off, you know. Anyway, I guess I better shut up and sit down. I want to thank you guys for coming here to listen to me. I'm not the best in the world, but I'm better than anybody else as far as I'm concerned. And I can never, ever finish a pitch. The only one thing I can always think of, my wife hates me when I say this, but sex is like a Chinese dinner. It's not over until everybody gets their cookies, and thanks for being here.